No way. Because I have the energy of one third of a Tim Kitzrow at any given time. Hello and welcome to the Backpack Show. Ladies, gentlemen, and those who identify as either or both, good to see you today. It's a wonderful day. Snow coming in Boston. Weather report.
Snow coming in Nashville.
Really?
Which I feel like is much more newsworthy.
That's always true. Always true. When you get a little snow in Nashville, it's a calamity. If this is your first time coming to the Backpack Show, please leave a comment. Make sure you say hello. If you don't comment, we don't know you're not. We don't know you're there, so you don't get any credit.
The Backpack Show is where we bring you not weather reports from places you probably don't live, but insights about success from unusual places.
That's a good idea. Well, we have incredible guests today. Not like other days. Other days we just have absolutely lackluster, boring guests.
Shut up. Every day we have interesting guests from all walks of life who share insights that you can use to fuel your own success. And today is no different. We have Rose Hall, the proprietor of Tessie's Teas. They make natural botanical teas. I'm drinking some right now. They're crystallized versions. So you put the crystals in your mug. You can have hot or iced tea. And woof, this ginger tea has a kick to it.
It's like a grandma ready to go.
But it has honey like already in it, but it's all crystallized and instant. It takes you no time at all. It's amazing. And we're going to talk to John Seveny, an internationally known photographer, writer, and teacher who's been sharing lessons he's acquired through some very dangerous travels all over the world for nearly 20 years. He's had some pretty harrowing adventures, but his photos are amazing. So we're going to talk to both of them today.
Hello. So six people said hello. Make sure 39 and counting other people also say hello to us on the Backpack Show.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to the Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
When you said you had energy like him, I was like, nobody has energy like
Nobody has energy like Tim Kitzer.
Absolutely not.
The minute I hear him in my ear, it's almost like having some ginger tea from Rose. Oh, hey, Deb. Deb made it to the beginning of one of our shows.
Look who else.
It's my father, my biological father.
Oh, Chloe missed my background. You know, if I could have brought a green screen with me, I would have, but those carry-on rules are pretty strict. So.
Danielle's here. Leslie's here. Hi, Leslie.
Oh.
Good to see Danielle. So we're going to start with Rose, I think. We're going to start with Rose Hall from Tessie's Tea. We've got mugs of it raised in her honor, and just to get that delicious flavor in our belly. There's about an 85% chance of a feline invasion today, just so people know.
Nice.
She has been a creature. I don't know what's going on with her. All right, I'm dragging Rose in here so we could just get this ball started. Rose Hall, how the heck are you today?
Good morning, guys. I'm great. How are you doing?
Terrific, one might say.
Oh, ouch.
No one would say that.
Stop it.
No one would say that. So what made you think, I think I need to make a tea company?
After having a whole other career first, by the way.
Right. As a professional assassin.
Yeah. Well, not exactly, but mental health therapist, social worker, working with impoverished families, but really being burnt out. Went to school in New York and got my master's in social work. Moved to Florida, got a doctorate in education. And working for the local school board, just totally burnt out. Helping families find housing, going to court about abused children, I was overwhelmed. So my husband got a position teaching science in Abu Dhabi. So we moved to the Middle East for 3.5 years. And while I was there, he says, "You're usually so busy, involved in the community. What are you going to do?" I says, "Well, I'm from Jamaica. I love tea. My grandfather lived to be 107, drinking tea. He felt that there was a plant in nature to cure all that ails us." So I started a tea company while in the Middle East. It was easy to do it over there because I traveled all through Asia, over 10 countries, sourcing tea, understanding the tea business. And one of my favorite places to visit was Sri Lanka. Sri Lankans, they grow their tea the way the rest of the world grows coffee, high elevation, the best quality, you know, soil, air, just, it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. So that's what got me here.
Len Joy is here.
Hey, author Len Joy joins us today.
Award-winning sports fiction author Len Joy, who I love.
Rose, you went an interesting route. You said, I think I'll do crystallized. Why crystallized? Why not just brew and here's your bag of leaves like everybody else does?
Oh, great question. Well, they found recently that you have to be careful with tea bags. They find that there's a lot of toxicity in tea bags. Mm-hmm. And also the reason that I like instant because people are always on the go. And right. I can remember driving to work, trying to do a tea bag and making a mess. You know, I can, in terms of using, not having time to steep time. And I was in New York visiting my uncle and he wasn't feeling well. And he said he had found some phenomenal, you know, ginger tea. So I tried it and it was crystallized. The only thing is they had crystallized instead of honey, they'd used molasses. So it had a bit of an aftertaste and it was a little bit bitter, you know, once it went down. So I said, you know, I know they have to also do it in with honey. So we decided to do instant tea because it's actually raw pieces of ginger and it's coated with honey and a little bit of cane sugar and it's crystallized. So crystallization is like freeze drying. So you still get the potency of the original herb, spice, or whatever it may be with a little honey and you need no sweetener. So it's convenient, delicious, and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Was it easier to start a business in Abu Dhabi than it would have been here? Or did you still file all the paperwork in the United States or wherever? Where did you start it?
I started it in the U.S. So my husband wasn't happy because I was traveling back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Oh. I wasn't there a lot because I came home to do the paperwork and actually get it started and then went back to Abu Dhabi to do some more traveling.
So you have ginger and mint. So do you have a favorite or are you not allowed?
I would say that I do have a favorite because I love ginger. I like the kick and the burn from ginger and I love all the health benefits, you know, anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, you know, antiviral properties, boost your immune system, especially in this environment, ginger is awesome. Now mint is awesome also because mint, first of all, is a natural appetite suppressant. And if you have any respiratory issues, it dries up that mucus and moves it out your body. It calms your stomach. And when you smell it, it's so relaxing that my husband drinks it. He's a coffee drinker and he puts ginger in his coffee. As a matter of fact, he put our ginger tea in his coffee because he's like a black coffee guy. And then at night he drinks the mint. He drinks mint at night because it settles him in and gives him a good night's rest.
Now I'm interested to know, When we do tea, for instance, a company like Celestial will come along and make 8,004 teas. Tazo has, you know, 650. You know, David's Tea up in Canada, a nice little company. They've got a whole lot of teas. You said, I think two is good. I'm good with two. So I'm just curious about that. What made you say that? And then are you planning on eight more or what's your thoughts here?
Well, we wanted to do, well, first of all, I'm a little bit OCD, like someone mentioned before. So my thing is that in Jamaica growing up, I'm very accustomed to drinking every morning ginger and mint or the combination. People have asked us about fruity teas. So the plan is to have 6 to 8, not 100, but 6 to 8 in total. We're going to do, when we lived in the Middle East, I had asked for samples to be made of dates, like a red date tea, and it was phenomenal. People just, as a matter of fact, I still had samples, and people call me, like my relatives, and go, do you have any more of those red date? That was like amazing. And then, so I'm going to do red date, I'm going to do chrysanthemum, I'm going to do lemon, and I'm also going to do hibiscus, because hibiscus has phenomenal benefits.
Plus a very Jamaican flower to have in the pile. So that's
yes,
a good
it
one.
Is. Yes,
and you
it is.
Learned
and
all of these growing up.
All growing up and also through traveling. What I also learned that I thought was phenomenal is that very few teas are made from the tea, from the flower itself. Hibiscus is really from the flower, not from the stem, not from the leaves. Chrysanthemum is the flower, not the stem, not the leaf.
I only started having leaf teas 2 or 3 years ago, and it is always kind of a weird feeling of like getting a flower sent to you and saying, just throw this in some hot water, you'll be great. God bless you. So, Rose, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you had a whole other career before this, and turns out not an assassin like I thought. You were in mental health care and all that. It's a tough world. It's I deal with clinical depression. You know, when you listen and sort of absorb all that yucky feeling all the time, you know, there's things you can't say because of your professional, you know, the boundaries you have to have and all that. Now you're a lady who sells tea. You can bring all the joy and love and soul and heart that you want to the world. How much of you comes through in Tessie's tea?
I think 100% because I feel my purpose in life is to be a service provider, to provide service to people. And that's why I was a social worker for almost 30 years, because I used to work for Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York, the Department of Psychiatry. So, and I just, all my life, I'm always into helping people going above and beyond. So this is just another way for me to still express that. You know, I am a person that provides service, and I hope, I'm always trying to find something worthwhile that people can enjoy, you know. So I think 100% of it comes through. I remember I was working with elementary school kids, and they were severely emotionally disturbed kids. And one of the little boys was having a really rough time, and I was sitting talking with him. And I said to him, because he was taking all kinds of medication because he had schizophrenia. And I was talking with him, and I said to him, you know, what does that feel like when you feel you have no control? And he said to me that it's like somebody is running around in his head and just never sits down. And he said, no one has ever asked me that before. I just feel like I'm just all over the place, and I can't keep still. I can't sit down. And it's hard for me to focus, you know. But this particular program helped a lot of children. And over 16 years, most of the time, we would find that parents are not as involved. We were able to get 88% parental participation. And we would meet with them every Tuesday night. And we got vendors. I wrote grants so that vendors in our local community would provide food, not pizza, actual dinner to these families. And that worked for 16 long years. And but it was very draining, you know, but I think it was a labor of love for me.
I feel like there's overlap between what you used to do and what you currently do, because there's a lot, when you're talking about like the medicinal properties of herbs and things and making teas from them, that can very often help people who have different types of disorders or even just emotional upset. But do you break out the tea, I guess, when you're helping someone in crisis?
But what we find is even the reason that we decided to break bread and sit down with these families, because when you sit down and have a meal with someone, there's a connection that happens that you really can't explain. You know, all the walls come down. People are honest and open in terms of, and they share what problems they're really having. Because I always say to people, if you don't tell me what's going on, I won't know how to help you. So it kind of bring down those walls, and we were able to help a lot of folks. There was one time I was able to get the state attorney's office to send a bunch of attorneys to come over and talk with these parents about what their legal rights were. And they were just totally blown away. So we were able to get a lot of community participation. It's funny, I went to visit my old position, and they asked me if I was coming back.
Oh, no.
I was like, I'm so sorry.
Be right there. Hang on. I'll throw down my business. You won the accolades of the 100 and 100 from American Express. You're 100 black women who own a business who won all the great accolades and a little bit of loot. That's not a bad win. How do you feel about that? Is that one of your first accolades that says, you know, you should be here, you've got it, or, you know, do you even need that sort of a thing?
Yes, I do. And it was phenomenal because I thought they were interviewing me. So my husband and I were driving, and I was like, ask me anything, ask me questions, you know. And then we came to, it was an accident on the road. So it was 15 minutes before my interview, and I said to him, pull off the road, pull off the road. You know, I have to make sure that I have my head together. And I started to talk with the lady, and she asked me about the business. She said she loved our story. And then she said, I can't even hold, this is not an interview. We're calling you to tell you that you're a recipient. You won one of our grants. I was blown away. Wow. I was so excited.
That is so grand. So grand. I don't know what that comes from then, Carrie. So you won, you get to show up, everything goes your way. What's next?
Well, what's next is we really want to be able to have people sample our teas. So we've been doing farmers markets. We're trying to do some trade shows coming up. Everything for 2019, unfortunately, was 2020, excuse me, was totally, you know, because of the pandemic, was closed down. So that was a rough year for us financially because a lot of the trade shows that we signed up for, they were canceled and they didn't do refunds. So that was, you know, it was rough. It was rough.
It's even harder now. They've all revised their contracts. You were talking about a room full of lawyers. They're like, hey, we had to update these contracts so we don't take a bath next time there's a pandemic. Like now it's really hard to get out from under them. So sorry, that sucks. But the good news is it's like a very mailable sort of shippable thing that people could sample. If you were to do, you know, influencer marketing or whatever, it's very transportable, which also makes it great for people who travel a lot back when that was a thing. And when it's a thing again.
Absolutely. People go to a restaurant. They said, oh, I just need some water. And they make the tea. They're on a flight. All they need is water. So it's very, very convenient. You know, people love our teas. I was on the beach and we were doing a farmer's market. And I sold this older gentleman some tea. And about an hour later, he was walking back over to me with his wife. And I was like, is everything okay? He says, my wife had a stomach ache because she ate something that didn't agree with her the night before. She drank your ginger tea and she feels so much better. She wanted to come out here personally. Thank you. I was totally blown away.
That's a win. That's the, I mean, what else do you need? Can I put a microphone in front of you? Could you say it?
Say it into the flower.
Speak clearly, please, sir.
These things happen. And I wish, oh man, I wish I could have gotten that on tape, but you know.
Dr. Rose Hall, stick around with us just a little bit. We're going to bring you back. We're going to ask you some questions at the end and a little tiny bit of a panel. I don't know why I couldn't think of the word panel, but thank you so much for being on this morning. We'll see you in the second.
Thank you for having me.
Boop. Okay. I totally forgot to do ads because,
seriously, try this stuff. Try Tessie's teas.
Sparkly gingery, though.
Mm. I did the ginger. I did it hot, and it has a kick. So you'll like it.
I was going to not tell you what I'm planning on doing with it, but I'm gonna let you in on it. I'm going to throw it with hot chocolate.
What?
I got a feeling that with hot chocolate, ginger and chocolate is amazing. And I think it's going to go, but I'll tell you afterwards because sometimes my plans don't work. Okay. We're sponsored by PubSite. Authors can make a really easy website for their book really fast and easy. If you're a little tech challenged, you just go to pub-site.com. You can make one. Takes no time. Couple hours, you're up and running. 14-day free trial, 13 and a half days in when you forget to have done that trial. It's only going to cost you $19.99 a month. It's very inexpensive. And if you're not a good website designer, even though it's not that hard to use.
It's super easy.
Pay for it, baby. $4.99 US. You're done.
Fixed. For them to build it for you.
That one.
So go get it. And it's made specifically for authors. So go try it out.
Hey, if you want to make a show like this, clearly any monkey could do it. You just go to cbrogan.me/StreamYard to put it together. StreamYard is the app we're using to make this show look amazing. It's just, you know, you have to have very smart and attractive guests. Otherwise, it doesn't work so well.
That is true. And luckily, we did.
We had two today. It's going to work out just fine. cbrogan.me/StreamYard. We are sponsored by Castos, meaning there is an actual audio podcast out there called The Backpack Show, Stuck It in Your Ear or something. It's not really.
You got this. I'm just drinking my tea.
You drink the tea? I'm just reading it, baby. Castos.com is how you can get your own hosting. This is the only second hosting company I've used since 2005 ever because I trust the boys at Libsyn so much. Castos is a competitor, but also a pal. Castos.com, you should try it out.
How much do they love you mentioning their competitor every
time? They hate it. So I just like to, every single time I'm like, pian, pian, pian. We're also sponsored by Dot Online. So the Backpack Show Dot Online is made by the nice people at Get Dot Online, where you can get 90% off if you want an online URL. So if we want Tessie's Tea Dot Online, 90% off. John 70
Don't
can
take
have
that Tessie needs
Dot
that.
Online, 90% off. Easy peasy. Also, last few days of Johnsonville, baby. You want free sausage? Carrie can't wait to send you some. Carrie at chrisbrogan.com. We're going to do a sausage appreciation day. That's
make it sound like very seedy.
Carrie will send you some sausage. You want some sausage? Ask Carrie.
You do have to tell me what you like or you're just going to get like whatever. Yeah. So
they have breakfast sausage. They have an incredible Italian sausage that I dare say could rival the Italians.
I like the Italian sweet and the sausage strips are ridiculously good if you can get them where you are, which we'll find out.
Look, I am the whitest of white trash bellies. I love the better cheddar. It is delicious. The better cheddar is, they inject with some kind of magical power, cheddar cheese up the middle of a sausage. I'm a little hungry this morning, I think.
It's Something. You know what? I didn't ever realize, and I don't know why I couldn't figure this out when I was a kid. And like, I was like, how do they get the cream in the Twinkie? There's like the three holes on the bottom. You can see where it went in. I was like, I was not a very smart kid, I feel like.
John 70's a smart artist and creator and writer.
Jeff suggests lime.
Lime. Oh, lime with the tea. I'm way back on lime with the sausage. I was like, not really.
You'll have to let us know how that turns out. Do they have any non-pork products? They have beef.
Well, it's a slaughterhouse.
Well, they have beef broths. So they actually do, if we're being technical. But I mean, like, that's the I think that's the choice.
No,
and turkey. And turkey.
Let's not be weird. All right.
And turkey. And let's get John. We need to talk to John.
John 70, thanks for waiting, buddy. Good to see
you. Good morning.
Now, John's used to being on the other side of the camera. He takes these really powerful photos of people living in all parts of the world. And sometimes you do this at great personal risk to yourself, John. How did you get started in this?
Oh, God, it's hard to even remember. My father was a painter and a sculptor and a guy who tinkered with everything. And we had a dark room at our house in Miami when I was growing up. And for some reason, and I've never really been sure, my father started sticking cameras in my hands when I was very young. And so there's all these pictures of me as a baby with cameras in my hands. Really strange. He was a strange man. But, and I went on to be a journalist and was writing for a long time, and then sort of said, I want to go more towards the photography sort of things. And then I said, I want to go towards the unemployed kind of thing and became an artist, which hasn't been that bad, really. I mean, in terms of, I never thought of it as a business until quite recently, and it's turned out to be okay.
So you go to all parts of the world, but you seem to go most often to places that are dangerous. Like, tourists really don't want to go there, but you go and take pictures of people and how life is, daily life is. So why go to the most difficult places to get to, where it's the most dangerous place for you to be? To take pictures, too. Because people get a little squirrely about that, right?
It's just, whenever we get into the question of why, I become uncomfortable, because I think the psychoanalyst will figure that out someday. I think it has something to do with wanting to put interesting input into the process in order to create interesting output, you know? And what I think is that, what I've noticed is that people who are sort of professional, very precise, technical photographers aren't really big on what I do, but people that have no real interest in it really like what I do. And sort of being on a kind of business morning show, I think, is kind of proof of that.
Yeah.
Yo, well, we're no weirdos. Artist. I mean, don't judge yourself on that. We're weirdos.
But I take terrible photos, John. Terrible.
But to your point,
I take some terrible yours ones. Are amazing. That's the dog. The dogs are here right now. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. These are my brother's dogs. This is this is Scribbles on the right, looking cute, and this is Pepper, the older mother figure on the left.
Scribbles. I don't think I've heard a cuter name than that.
It's a great name.
They're my brother's dogs. I'm not responsible. No credit to me. Oh,
well, the photo credit is to you.
Yeah. It's Mexico City.
Great place. Also scary place. Plaza Garibaldi. I was there.
That's very close. And I'm always getting yelled at by my friends for walking up and down like that big street in front of Plaza Garibaldi's.
With a very expensive camera. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Sometimes cheap ones, but yeah.
I don't like to throw my own autobiography in, but I have this absolute, every time I've been somewhere that you've been, I have to tell you. So I was in Mexico City for this event. And after the event, I went with Geraldo and Eduardo. And Geraldo couldn't speak a lick of English. And Eduardo and I have like 31 words of Spanish and he had like 26 words of English. So we go to Plaza de Garibaldi, which also is where all the tourists would go. And it's also where like there's like...
Indeed.
There's more mariachi people than there are pigeons in the square. And we were there. And as we were walking into the place, we were going to go get a beer. They said, I said, wow, there's a lot of people out over there. And he said, yeah, someone was just murdered. And I go, oh, like the other night. And he goes, no, like just murdered. Someone was just murdered. I was like, wow. I didn't need to know that. So that's.
I mean, you kind of did need to know that. So you walk home like a different way, or maybe
when Carrie says that you were in dangerous places. I mean, that's a super dangerous place.
Yeah.
And Plaza Garibaldi is one of my favorite places on the planet, really, for photography. I mean, it's you notice. I mean, there's a million mariachis who are just photogenic. Yeah. And then on top of that, there are a million weird tourists and sex workers and everything else.
I mean,
everything. And it just becomes, the more chaos there is, sort of the more there is to look at. It's not some, I'm not one of those adrenaline junkies, but the more chaos there is, there's sort of more happening and more there is to look at. And yeah, I've been there when people were murdered also. So it's unfortunately not that much of a unique experience.
You've had some really scary experiences yourself. That's kidnapped.
Panama City.
I
just went there last
John.
Year. So that was the first time I'd been to Panama.
Oh, have you gone back? Like you went back?
Panama City? No, I've only been there once, and I've gone through some rough things in Mexico City, which I'm sure will come up. And and I decided. My mom said, "You need a real vacation." She said, "Go to Panama City. It's safe and quiet, and the Americans used to run it. You know, go there." And I did, and it was a really wonderful experience. And of course, I spent the whole time taking pictures. Advice. There's all these questions and comments coming in. It's really amazing.
Yeah, so I'm gonna bring up Zoe's, I don't know. This is our friend Naz. He's over in Milan right now, and he said, you know, what do you got for advice for his daughter who's taking kid photos? I always thought they said never work with kids and dogs, John.
That's right. No, I mean kids are great, but they just move really fast.
That little face.
I don't know. I think it all comes down to personality, and because I'm not such a commercial type of photographer, I mean, I've done commercial work and editorial work and photojournalistic work and all that. But I think the main thing with those kinds of efforts is to understand business and marketing and branding and selling. I mean, even more, it becomes where taking pictures is like 1% of it. I mean, you guys know this from any business, the part of it that you love becomes the very smallest part a lot of time.
Right. Right. Well, so back to your work, but thank you for taking a peek.
People love them, by the way. Chloe says, "I love your photos. They seem like they're sharing stories of places and people we don't often see. Is that your intention?"
Yes, Chloe. That's absolutely true. They're very much stories in a little box. You know, they're stories in boxes. And usually I know the people pretty well. Most of the time I can tell you she is an example of one I don't. But a lot of times, sometimes I meet people like that young lady and I just say, "Hello, you know, and can I take a picture?" I take a picture and I'm gone. That doesn't happen very often. Usually I know the person that I'm photographing. I get to know them very well, and I can tell you their life stories. And sometimes I photograph people over 5, 10, 12 years.
Wow. You mentioned this, you know, with regards to professional, like really trained photographers, you know, come along and say poopy things about your work. But they're going after a different kind of a thing. It's a different attempt of capture. You're doing that mix of journalism and art. Maybe it's a little too art to be full journalism, and maybe it's a little too journalism to be art. Is that what goes on?
Yeah, you just nailed it, actually, and I've said that myself. It's the galleries kind of say, this is a little too, this, it's got one foot in the real world and one foot in sort of the imaginary surreal world, right?
Right.
And the galleries say, we don't want this. This is news photography. And the news agents, they say, this is art. Will you do something better next time? You know?
Right. Get us a real story, mister.
Well, it's storytelling is what it is to a great degree. And the problem in marketing is, as you guys know also, is that people want a box to put it in so they can sell it. And that can become difficult, but it can also become the strength of whatever it is you're selling, that it's different and new and difficult to categorize.
What do people need to know about your selfie and then how they can maybe make their selfies better for John 71?
Copy mine. No.
Don't do this, kids.
Yeah, you know, put the light in front of you on the left or the right kind of things. Kind of simple things that don't sound that. I mean, this light is very, very different than this light. You know, move that light around. You know, play with the light. That's a good one.
For sure.
It's always a good one.
You've taught photography all over the world as well. Do you find that different approaches work to teach people your techniques in different parts of the world? Like, is it based on culture, or does everybody kind of learn the same, like point and shoot?
I don't teach what I do. I don't teach anyone to do what I do. And in the old days, it was nice because no one knew what I did. Now, the minute they're going to take a course, they look up your name and they know what you do. But I used to just try to go in real objective so that I wasn't giving them kind of a path that they thought they were supposed to take. So now I get more students who think they're supposed to go out and take pictures like I take so that they'll get a good grade.
You know? and they're sucking up.
Yeah, I mean, I assume that if they come to study with me now, that they want to do something maybe a little edgier than sunsets and rainbows and puppies, you know? Although I do puppies, as you saw.
That's true. You can't cast aspersions.
But I really do hope that they'll take their own path, you know? And I think, I mean, that's what I've done. I've been fortunate enough to have people around me who said, do it your way, you know? And it'll work out somehow.
Naz is wondering, do you know photographer Giles Dooley? He's a close friend.
I do like, not. Unfortunately,
you don't all know each other? Photographers no, don't all know each other?
A lot of us do, though. It's actually, there aren't that many of us that you know, rise above the selfie, I think. But I don't know him, but I will look him up.
So Naz had another question that I was going to ask as well, which is, you know, they always say the best camera is the one you have with you. And basically, there's no one buys cameras anymore, John. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about, you know, is anyone ever coming back to an actual camera? Will that just be relegated to people like you who fancy yourself a little more elevated than a phone can do? Or what happens?
I mean, people would be surprised at the photographs that I've published in books that were taken with my phone, you know? But, you know, I do run around with expensive digital gear and all that. And sometimes I go back to using film, you know? But just for a certain look or... You know, but I'm very romantic about film too, as a lot of people are. There's this whole renaissance with film going on right now, but I think it's really wonderful to be able to carry just one very expensive camera that you have to protect like it was your passport, right? And a tablet and go anywhere in the world, and you can do anything with that. I think that's really a wonderful thing. The less is more. That's what I would say.
Do people get to see your photos? Like, do you show them after you take it?
Oh, yeah. We have exhibitions, a lot of talks. We do in the last couple of years, because exhibiting is really expensive and sales are sort of hit or miss at exhibitions, we've started doing more talks where it's sort of slideshow and tell the stories about the photographs. The story parts are just as important as the photographs themselves, the stories behind them. And people are really interested in them. Yeah, and then we have, I do publish books. They're for sale on my website. If anyone wants to look, there's a little link there for prints and little books I make. And so people do see stuff, see what I do everywhere.
But the people whose photo you're taking, like, can you turn the tablet around and show it to them?
Quite
or
often.
Like...
Sometimes it can and sometimes it don't. I mean, it depends on, you know, I don't even know what's going to come out sometimes, you know? I mean, you take a picture and you think, this is going to be great, and then you look at it, and so now... And then other times you take a picture and you go, oh, this is great. Let me show this person right away. I'm proud of it, you know? And and then there's also just the logistics of it. Am I on the way out of town? Am I going to see this person again? But I will try to let them see it. And the interesting thing is that smartphones have sort of closed the digital divide to a great degree. So it's gotten to where I take a picture of a drug dealer in Guatemala, and 3 weeks later I see him and he says, you put my picture on Facebook.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's changed a lot, where there used to be this big division between who I photographed and who knew about my work. That's kind of gone now.
That's terrifying. So you've had a couple terrifying experiences, if you're willing to talk about them, but you put yourself out there to do this work, even though you're freelance, right? Like, you're not a journalist working for an outlet now.
No, you're not
being retained by someone. You're going out there to capture the truth of how people live in different parts of the world that are dangerous. And at times, dangerous things have happened to you.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of run-ins with, you know, drug cartels in Mexico. I was kidnapped in 2019. Too early in the morning to talk about that.
That's scary.
I mean, it was quite frightening. It's been one of those therapy-provoking experiences, let's call it.
But you have that powerful creative drive that pushes you to go back out there.
That makes me feel foolish to say this, but I think sometimes that I have to work for like 3 years and then I have to stop for a year to do therapy and medication. And then I go back to work for 2 or 3 more years, you know, until something bad happens. It all builds up, you know. No, there is. I think I do have a certain resiliency, but. I mean, the way I kind of think of it is mathematically, I spent probably 18 years, 20 in Latin America, and we'll be back. And I spent two of those that were very, very bad days of my life, 2 days of my life that were really very bad. So I try to look at it that way. My philosophy is that almost no place is as dangerous as people say, but any place can become far more dangerous than people say it is. I mean, you're talking about shootings in Las Vegas or something. I mean, it's not that different. You can spend all night in Garibaldi and Plaza Garibaldi and not know someone got killed 12 feet away. I mean, it's sort of, I don't know. I'm not afraid of the world, and I'm not an adrenaline junkie, and I'm not real big on challenging fate. I'm just really, really interested in telling good stories that haven't been told before.
So if, like Chris, they told you somebody got murdered right over here, your advice would be to go home a different way?
Like, I used to be kind of sillier like that. I a little more carefree. Someone said, oh, there was a shootout at this bar last night. This was in a town in Mexico called Zacatecas. And I was like, I got to go there tomorrow, you know? And I just wanted to see, were there bullet holes? Were there? I was just curious, you know? It's kind of like being a 9-year-old, I think. I think that's what it is. Being a photographer allows you to be 9 years old.
For a long time.
Do you offer classes?
I do indeed. And if anyone's interested, just send me an email.
Perfect. Go get it. Go get them.
John, you were, Naz has the question, have you been to Venezuela? He was born there.
I have not, unfortunately. And I do hope to when the situation improves a little bit. We all know that there's a situation there is a touch and go right now. But I would like to go there. What I don't like to do, and this brings this up, is I don't like to do what I call like poverty porn. You know, I like for the people to be a little more full and fleshed out than just, these are poor people, you know. A lot of stuff I do deals with alcoholism and drug addiction and emotions, a lot of emotions, you know, a lot of just emotional feelings that are really on the bare surface in places like Venezuela, of course. I'd be a little concerned. It's sort of like Cuba. I'd just be a little concerned about taking photographs that just show poverty or just show hardship and don't have any more depth. I think that in my photographs, what you see are people who they may be going through tough times or things like that, but they show real resiliency and a real, more than anything, attitude. I just like the way that people in a really bad situation who have really nothing to lose can just be cocky and just strut like peacocks and, you know, and just show this whole, everything they are and have no real qualms about it.
Well, we might have a hookup to teach you where to go in Jamaica. You can get a nice bowl of rondon or, you know, there's a lot of good meals out there. What's your thing to eat? I imagine because you love Garibaldi so much, you must love street food a lot. What's your thing to eat that you need to get when you get back on a plane somewhere over there?
Let me think about that. I haven't thought about it in a while. Yeah, I got to be honest. I'm really big on like Italian food in New York.
New York Italian food. big in Mexico.
Yeah,
but you're Miami, right? You're in Miami now.
Yeah, there's all kinds of weird stuff. I love Cuban food in Miami. I'm just kind of raised on that stuff, you know? Mm. And then mom's cooking, nothing better than that, because I think she's listening. So
we had someone on whose mom was listening, and so they made a mistake and said that they had just tasted some food that was like better than their mom's, and we're like,
"What?
No,
they
got in some hot water."
Ackee and codfish you could have when you're in Jamaica. There's a lot of good things to get down there. Sure. Festivals, one of my favorite breads in the world. All right, I have to bring Rose Hall back, and we're going to do this.
John is amazing. I agree.
Thank you so much, Nassim. It's very nice of you. And maybe we'll see each other in Venezuela when things get in order down there.
Yeah, or Milan, where he hangs out these days. You could have a little of both. Yeah. Hey, Rose, welcome back. I had to drag you out. Carrie's going to laugh at me.
He's so fussy. He's like, everyone in their proper in your places. We could have six people, and he'd be like, like he has to order everybody.
I was thinking about this the whole time we did this interview with John. I was thinking about the fact that in a lot of ways, what Rose's first career was, Dr. Hall, was, you know, talking to a lot of people who maybe had different life situations going on, mm-hmm. May or may not have been the kinds of like the subjects in John's pictures. I'm curious, you know, what you were thinking when you saw some of his work.
You know, a lot about my work as a social worker, mental health therapist. I've done all kinds of stuff in that field, and how, you know, unfortunately here in the United States, we have adults that, you know, prostitute their children, which is a kind of, I don't know if that's a morning show topic, but I'm just going to say a reality.
Right.
It is what happened, and how, you know, confronting these women was not easy, but needed to be done, because my major concerns is never my safety, is the safety of these children who are helpless, mm-hmm. and have no one to kind of, you know, help them, no one to fend for them, no one to speak up for them. So we've had, you know, a couple of experiences of that. I had something that really touched my heart when I worked with teen parents. A young lady said to me that a lot of people see them as teen parents and think that they, you know, that they're promiscuous and they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing as children. And the truth is that a lot of them have been raped by family members, people they trusted and people they loved. So that work is kind of gut wrenching and it's very hard work, you know. And the other piece of that is also bringing these men, you know, whoever the perpetrator is, to justice. And I remember one of the 16-year-olds who had a 3-year-old child from someone in her family. She became valedictorian of her graduating class at 16. Wow. And at graduation, she told her story in such a classy way that it just, you know, we had dignitaries on the stage. There was not a dry eye. I had to leave the auditorium because I was overwhelmed. And she came and visited me and she said to me, you know, for 5 years, I felt like I was living in a fog. And I met you and you changed my life. And I'm no longer in this fog. I don't know how to say thank you to you. And I just, it's just overwhelming. It's too much.
I truly admire that. I truly admire people like Rose. I have a therapist that I'm like telling people that. And,
same.
And when I have to unload all this stuff, and I'm real serious about this, I'm aware that therapists and mental health workers, they have to absorb it all. And then they have to unload it themselves somewhere. It's God's work. And I know that's a cliche, but it really is the most generous kind of work there is. And I salute you for that.
Thank you.
This happens every time the guests love each other more than they like us. And we can just like put ourselves backstage and it could be like the Rose and John show.
It's the best part of the show.
That would be, yeah. That would be fun. I would watch that show, actually.
One of our guests, Chip, is we always, you know, joke and tease and make fun with Chip. But Chip is saying that photography is one of the things that he misses the most. And yeah. He's saying that, you know, he used to do a lot of sports and travel and urban photos. That's one of those things that is little known about a guy like Chip, is that he has an incredible quality with a camera because it's just sort of everyone owns a camera now. Or, you know, he's known for all these different things. It's interesting in a lot of ways. Film and photography can be therapy in its own right, just like really great cup of tea is therapy. You know, I mean, there's so many different ways to get to what we need. I mean, we still need the pros. Let's not be weird about that. Like, we still absolutely need to sit down with somebody who can help us sort through our threads. But it's nice that we can get out and do those sorts of things.
I can definitely see, though, where your own, like, inside bucket or whatever of emotion would be full and you'd be like, I think I'm gonna go make some tea. Like, this is I'm gonna do something else for a while.
I'm overwhelmed. When you were talking about travel, though, when we went to Sri Lanka to go to visit the tea gardens in the mountains, you have to pass an elephant orphanage. So I visited this elephant orphanage and it was amazing. You know, oh my God. The elephants were on the quarry. And one of them tripped and fell, and all these elephants gathered around the fallen elephant, got on their knees and pushed with their shoulders until the elephant was standing again, and then they all dispersed. I said, can you imagine if human beings did that for each other? It was just an amazing, amazing experience. And they also make paper from elephant dung, and they call it poo paper.
Poo paper. I've seen that.
You have? How have you seen that?
It's a thing. I mean, I've had it sent to me from a guy who was in, I think it was Kenya. It's a thing. But by the way, elephants are so smart, way smarter than we ever give them credit for. And they're funny. Yeah. So this is a baby elephant in Thailand who just got caught in the cane fields where he's not supposed to be.
Is he hiding?
He's no doubt. Let me show you this. I can zoom up a little bit. He is hiding behind a phone pole, hoping that nobody sees him. Because it's a little baby elephant. He's a little kid. And he's like, no one's ever going to know.
No, I'm not. That's like when I got caught on the phone, like in the 80s. I wasn't supposed to be on the phone. And I had the phone behind my back and the wires going to the kitchen phone. No, I'm not.
And that says, what a way to start the day. This is powerful. Thanks, Rose, John, Carrie, and Chris. How generous and filling us with perspective. You know, one last thing about photography, and then I'm going to ask the question of the day. Well, we'll do person of the day, then I'll ask a question. I was at the AP's headquarters in New York City, and I was going down that hallway that they have, like, some of the most famous photos you've ever seen. And I was with two really interesting people. I was with Jeff Pulver, who's like this guy who like co-founded Vonage, really smart, crazy mind, and his most crazy friend, Gio, who's a photographer. And instead of being a consultant, he's an insultant and an incredible photo guy. And he puts his hand out to one of these photos that we've all seen, like the monk setting himself on fire in Vietnam, right, kind of a thing. And he puts his hand out and he goes, a photograph is the most perfect capture of a moment that never happened. And when he said that, I've never heard anyone else say it before. So to me, he quoted, I mean, it could be anybody. It could be the Declaration of Independence. But he said that, I thought, there's nothing more true, because it's just that moment. Like any other thing could be going on. It just happens that we have that capture. So
that's right.
Anyway, what a day. What a start. Okay, this.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
Can't be anybody besides Naz. I mean, he really dragged all kinds of good information and insights out there. A lot of good participation all the way around, but Naz.
And
really
he wants to
there.
Take you to dinner.
Thank you, right. Naz. I'll be there. Yeah, we'll figure that out.
Milanese food, you won't do poorly. You won't do poorly. Although
he didn't
like
make that
back.
Offer to us, by the way. I would just like you to know. He stopped
like
by
to get
all
back
the time.
To Jamaica.
The first dinner offer I've seen.
There you go. First backpack dinner offer. I can't say anything about Abu Dhabi food, because the way they tried to impress me was to show me really great American dishes. I said, not even a half a camel or something? Can't we eat something weird? No. They're like, no, here's some chicken.
Yeah,
I've had that happen where people say, we're going to take you out. We're, you know, you've been in Guatemala. They have really good ribs, barbecue ribs. You know, of course, you go, and it's this horrible interpretation of barbecue ribs from the South here.
A billionaire took me to McDonald's once. That's all I could say about that. All right.
So, oh, wow. I went to a Cuban restaurant in Miami, and I just asked the waitress, because the wait staff actually wouldn't speak English with us. I didn't need to. I just said, bring me what you eat, like when you're back on break or something. And so she brought me these amazing things. Everybody else wanted my food. I was like, tough. You got to work here to get this food.
So time for the backpack question. Here's the question. What goes in your backpack? You know, and these world traveler guests of ours today most definitely carry a lot of things. So the question is, what goes in your backpack? It could be something physical, like an avocado. It could be something metaphorical, like hope for the future. Carrie, what's one of your favorite things that's gone in there physically?
Oh, man. So I keep saying an extra set of teeth, because that was one of the most unexpected. I was like, wait, what? But the other one that really stayed with me was a book you hate, because the idea is if it was the only book you had, eventually you'd read it and learn something from it.
That's a good one.
Force yourself.
And then how about something metaphorical?
Kindness.
How can we always have to laugh at that? in the context that the word kindness was used, it was a rather interesting time. Horacio Garcia Rojas, a Mexico City-based horror comedy actor, also said pride in the place that they're from. So, Len Joy, we missed you. So glad you could come back. So glad you didn't have to, I don't know, work out or all the other things that you've been doing lately with your time.
Chip says the hated book turns into firewood. I guess that's a legitimate point.
Could be. Yeah. Rose Hall, what goes in your backpack?
Tea.
I'm gonna pretend I'm surprised, but
it's
I'm
nice
not.
And portable when it's crystallized.
tea is so warming. It has so many great health benefits. I love tea. So when I'm traveling in my purse, I always have tea with me, no matter
it's
where.
Very
I
on brand.
I was on a plane to Istanbul, Turkey, and
not
I
Constantinople.
Asked who it is. For some hot water, and I opened up the tea and put it in, and she goes, what is that? And she, can I try? And I gave her, and then two people next to me asked for tea, and I was on the plane giving her my tea. So really,
you're passing around weird pouches of stuff. Nobody's asking questions. What's happening
pouches.
In aisle 36? Get back there.
So tea goes in for you.
Okay.
Now, John 70, I know you really want to put a little Thai baby elephant in your backpack.
That's the first one. I have two, and one of them is really corny, and that's just general patience, because I'm just a terribly impatient person. And the other one is, I hadn't thought about this until today, but a set of universal handcuff keys. And I think I'm going to start wearing them on my chain. Just so, you know, you never know. You
wow.
never know.
You are so right. Yeah. See, the other day it came out that I used to carry an extra doorknob, and some people have been making fun of me, but you know what? You just never know.
It's the superstition of it. It's the idea that if I don't have the handcuff keys, something might happen. If I do have them, nothing will happen.
Right. In my case, I had a friend whose doorknob was broken on their apartment, and if they accidentally let the door close with the doorknob on the inside, they couldn't get back in. So I was like, got it. That was it.
Well, I can tell you that when it comes to tea, my grandmother had absolutely pedestrian taste in tea. She was a French-Canadian woman, and so your tea choices were black or orange pekoe, which is also black. So you got tea or tea, and her idea of really good tea was the kind that came like 300 packages to a box or something like that. But there was a little surprise about what my Grammy would add to tea to make it really good. And I don't know if I should tell you this one, but here's what she did.